We are the people of God, called out from the world, chosen by the Father, redeemed by the Son, being transformed by the Spirit, and journeying together to that great day when the rule of Christ will fill the earth. It is a privilege to be God's people. We love progress. All of us really like a sense of progress. When I'm driving out on the plains of West Texas or through the cornfields of Illinois, either way, I like to see my odometer click through the miles. I like that sense of progress. Some of you are students and you have to write papers, whether that's a 10-page paper or a 20-page paper. I imagine that you are typing away and every so often you check, what page am I on? Page one? Page two? Page three? Why? Because we like that sense of progress. Some of us have been involved in weight reduction programs. You know how that works? You're anxious, if you haven't had a big meal, to jump up on that scale and find out how much have I lost. We like to keep track because we like that sense of progress. And we hate it when we can't see progress. It's always so discouraging. This past summer, I was on a lake with five other people in a boat, a small boat, that was headed toward an island several miles out in this rather large lake in Ethiopia. Lake Tana, it's called. And we had actually spent some time circling some hippos in the lake and enjoyed watching them. It was a pretty nice day. And then the clouds began to come as we headed off toward the center of this lake. And we were still several miles away, but along the way I could see, you know, we were kind of making progress. And then the wind came up and the waves got really choppy and our boat started bouncing up and down. This is a lot further than you can swim back to shore. And then the rain started and we were being pelted with rain. And then it became so dark that I couldn't see the island that we were headed toward anymore. And it was gray sky and gray water, and it felt like we weren't making any progress at all. It was discouraging. But we all know what it's like to be discouraged when we can't see progress, right? It's a lot more serious when perhaps it's in regard to your career advancement or raising your children or a savings program that you are trying to engage in. And perhaps most serious is when we feel there's no progress in the plan of God. It seems like it has just stalled, sputtered out, fallen flat. You see, it happens, doesn't it, when family life stresses us and work life exhausts us and on a national level we are overwhelmed with injustice, and on a global level we see immense suffering and we begin to wonder if the plan of God is moving forward at all, or did it just die in the headwinds? We don't want to be discouraged about progress with the plan of God, but it's hard not to be. What can encourage our faith when it seems that the plan of God is making no progress? How can we divert discouragement when it seems that the plan of God has just stalled out? It's the question we want to answer this morning. And in our text, we're going to find three realities that I think if we grasp them, they'll be very encouraging for us. They're the kind of realities that will blow some wind into our sails and give us a fresh sense of encouragement when it looks like the work of God has kind of stalled on us. We're going to look at a passage of Scripture that was written initially for the benefit of Israel, a group of people who were on the border of the Promised Land, and yet they found themselves really existing as a group of nomads. People who had been slaves for 400 years. People who knew they had to cross this river and get into a land filled with giants and walled cities, and they were stuck. It seemed for them that God's plan had stalled out. And so Moses writes this book of Genesis and this passage in particular to encourage them and what will help them with a new view of reality. And that encouragement works for us as well. We are in Genesis chapter 15. And so if you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn there with me and enjoy the encouragement that God has for us this morning. We're in Genesis chapter 15. And our first encouragement is this, that God is making us into his people. God is making us into his people. Even when you can't see it, God is in the process of building a people for himself. God helped Abram understand this in Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 5. We start off with verses 1 through 3. Genesis 15 says this, "After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. 'Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward.' But Abram said, 'Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless, and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus?' And then Abram said, 'You've given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir.'" Abram could not see progress in God's plan. From Abram's perspective, he looked at his present state in life and he said, "You know what? It looks to me like God's program has stalled out." You notice in the text, it says, "after these things." We won't go back and read it, but it probably refers to this last chapter, chapter 14 before that, where Abram has been living by faith, and he had a military victory with his little band of men, and he recovered Lot, and he'd recovered some possessions. And then he was blessed by a strange priest out of nowhere, Melchizedek, and everything that priest said, "You're going to be blessed by God." And Abram said, "Great, I'm waiting for my blessing." And nothing was happening. In fact, it seems that Abram likely was afraid that because he did not take from the spoils, he did not make himself rich as he could have done, but he kept waiting for the Lord. Perhaps he was beginning to fear that the Lord had kind of forgotten him. And so Abram asked this question, "What will you give me, Lord, since all I have here is Eliezer, the steward in my household?" Now, you and I might think, well, yeah, that'd be a nice reward for Abram to have a son. I'm sure it's pretty comforting, and nobody wants to go childless. What a nice thing that he could have a son. That's not really the issue. This is not about Abram having kids so he can enjoy a nice Social Security and have grandkids who play on his knee and he could play ball with. For you see, when Abram asks about a son, he's basically saying to God, "You promised me over 11 years ago that I was going to have a son, that you would use that son to form a great nation to impact the world. That was your plan. And I believed you, and I followed you out of my homeland of Ur, and we went to Haran, and I stayed there. And now I've come, and I've followed you on this journey. I've been to Egypt and back, and I've come back to the land. And I'm wanting to know, what is the proof that your plan is still going forward? Because from everything I can see, it's stalled out." And so God says, "I can encourage you with this." Verses 4 and 5 is the response that God gives to him. "Then the word of the Lord came to him, 'This man, Eliezer, will not be your heir, but a son who is in your own flesh and blood will be your heir.' He took him outside and said, 'Look up at the sky. Count the stars, if you indeed you can count them.' And then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. What God is telling Abram is this, that he is building Abram's seed, his descendants, his family, into the people of God. This is what's going to happen. A son, and God won't even pronounce his name. He doesn't even say Eliezer. Just this one isn't going to be the heir. No, it's going to be someone from your own body. And Abram's saying, I'm getting too old for this. And my wife, she's too old for this. Watch, Abram. Just watch. Because I'm going to make it happen. And God has his hand on the situation, and he encourages Abram and says to him that God has not forgotten his promise. And then he gives him this wonderful little sign. Imagine Abram walking outside and looking up at this dark sky in Palestinian area. There are no electric lights like we have in Dallas to mess up the darkness, right? And he looks up there, and it's just littered with stars everywhere. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four, five, six. I lost count. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. I can't count them all. Exactly. That's the point. You see, Abram, even if you can't do it, if you can't see it, I'm telling you that your descendants will be more than you can count. How encouraging. God is in the business of building a people for himself. When Israel got this book, certainly they would have been encouraged with this realization. Perhaps Israel was wondering if this little group of nomads that they were would actually survive as a nation. Could they really become the people of God? That's what God said to them. They'd wandered through the desert, watching their fathers and mothers die. Perhaps they were just a bit discouraged that God's program would go forward. Israel was to be encouraged that God was building them into his people. They were the descendants of Abram. And so I suspect that they would begin to understand that they were part of a much bigger story, that their story began actually not with Abram. Their story began in Genesis 1. For you see, God had intervened into this chaos that was earth, and he created human beings so that they would bear his image, so they would represent him as the ruler of the world. And yet, Adam and Eve, placed in a garden, chose not to fulfill the mission of God. Instead, they rebelled against him. And their descendants continued to rebel and continued to rebel until God decided to clean the earth with a flood. And he destroys all the people of the earth until except for Noah and his family. And yet, Noah gets off to a bad start, even though he had the opportunity to do what Adam and Eve could not do, what they failed to do. And a little bit later, we find out that the peoples of the earth have multiplied and they become many nations. And the way it happened was because they had tried to build a tower that would reach to the heavens so that they might even unite themselves with the gods and become a superhuman race, pridefully making a name for themselves. And God had scrambled their speech and spread them out, and earth was chaos and darkness. And then God reached in and found this man, Abram, a pagan man. And he pulled this man to himself and set him on a quest, a mission, where he would go to a land that God would show him so that his people would become a demonstration of the very rule of God on the earth, that his people would represent the God of heaven to the nations of the world. And as Israel heard this story about their father Abram and how God had indeed promised that the seed would develop and multiply and fill the earth, they had to realize they were part of something so much bigger than just being a bunch of slaves who got out of Egypt to get into a new place called Canaan. They are the people of God, positioned to represent him. Wow. Encouraging for Israel. But what about us? I mean, we're not Israelites. Abraham's not our father. Or is he? Indeed, we also can take great encouragement in this recognition that God is building us into his people. We are the people of God. The New Testament declares it. You're a bunch of Bible scholars at Center Point, so I just remind you, remember Romans 4? What? Romans 4, Paul declares that we are descendants of Abraham. He says, the result of faith is that the promise given to Abram may be certain to all the descendants, not only to those who are under the law, the Israelites, but also to those who have the faith of Abraham. He is father of us all. So this becomes our story as we connect back to Abram. He is our father, Paul says, in the presence of God whom he believed. So God has been at work to make us his people for how long? About 4,000 years or so. And the project's still going. When Peter writes to the spread out persecuted church in Asia Minor, he says this: we are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, people, a people of his own choosing, so that you may proclaim the virtues of the one who called you out of darkness and into this marvelous light. Once you were not a people, Peter says, but now you are God's people. Wow. That's us. What God began with Abram so long ago, he is continuing with us to mold us into his people. Sure, it's hard to believe when you can't see progress in God's plan. When the world looks at the church and just thinks it's another charitable organization, it's nice that you go to a church. It's just like all the other good charities we have. Hard to believe that they're the people of God. At the worst, the world looks at the church and it's seen as an evil, a crutch of the people. It deceives people. It makes people weak. It really isn't good for society. Hard to believe that we are the people of God. When the church is fractured into denominations and led by sometimes individuals who are immoral and priests who are pedophiles and viewed as old-fashioned oppressors of women and rejectors of science and religion, it's hard to believe that we are the people of God. But we are. Be encouraged, my friends. We are part of this great work to multiply the descendants of Abraham in a numberless degree. You and I are like those little beacons of light up in the sky. Just little dots, each one, the people of God. From around the world, every color, every language, people who eat different foods, people who use iPhones and those who never will, from ages past to those who are not yet born. We are part of this vast array called the people of God. How encouraging is that? That's the first reality. When it seems that God's plan is stalled out, not making much progress, believe this. Be encouraged. We are God's people. There's a second reality, just as stirring in this text. And that reality is this. It comes in the following verses. God is taking his people to their destiny. God is taking his people to their destiny. He guarantees them that he will get them to their place. We find it in verses 7 through 21. And once again, we begin with some questions. of doubt, really, from Abram himself. Look at verse 7. He also said to him, that is God speaking, I am Yahweh, I am the Lord who brought you out from Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land where you're standing, Abram, to take possession of it. But Abram said, Sovereign Lord, how can I know it? How can I know that I will gain possession of it? You see, once again, Abram struggled to believe that God would give him the land of Canaan. How can I know? It just seems that that's an impossibility. There's only one of me. And that land is big. And there's walled cities. And there's giants. And I don't have an army. And how will I know that you'll do this? God answers in verses 9 through 21. And what he does is he makes a covenant with Abram and pledges to take his people and plant them in their place. Notice the covenant commitment, the guarantee that God makes for his people. We're back in the text and at verse number 9. So the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer and a goat and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Then the birds of prey came down and on the carcasses, but Abram drove them away. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep. And a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. And the Lord said to him, know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and that they will be enslaved and mistreated there. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, Abram, you will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, to your descendants, I give this land from the Wadi of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites and the Kenizzites and the Kadmonites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Raphaites and the Amorites and the Canaanites, the Girgashites and the Jebusites. God provided Abram with a vision and a very clear revelation that he was about to plant the people in their place, in God's place. And he does that through this covenant. There's lots of things we could talk about, this very mysterious covenant. Let's talk about a few things that are most important for us, most clear. There's no way we're going to be able to explain everything. There's lots here that's actually just kind of mystery, some things that we don't fully understand. But one thing we know is that this is a solemn covenant. It's an agreement, a relationship that's set between a couple of parties. And it's solemn because this one is going to be sealed by blood. Animals are sacrificed in order to kind of demonstrate that, yes, this is a covenant that is going to be sacred. It's going to be, it's going to require the life of living creatures in order to set it in place. A covenant is It's like a wedding vow. It says, I'll do my part and you'll do your part. It's two parties, each with a part to do. We all live under covenants. I have a covenant relationship with my wife. It's a pledge. It says, I will love her and I will stay with her and I'll be committed to her until death do us part. And you know, if you only read the first half of the vow, it's just my part. And that's kind of what we have here, is this statement of what God's part is in the covenant, to be able to say, here's what I'm going to do for you. I live in a covenant relationship with my homeowners association. I pay them money. They tell me to repair my fence. Maybe it's not quite the same. We live under these agreements. I have a covenant, a contract with Dallas Seminary where I teach. And I read the requirements and I sign my name that says I'm going to do these things. And here's what you are going to do for me. This is what a covenant relationship is all about. Now think of it. This is God. The God who created the universe. The God who's the supreme king over all. Coming to this man and saying, I will bind myself in covenant to you and your descendants. Whew. It's a covenant, a solemn covenant from God to Abram. A second highlight, it involves the future for Abram's descendants. Where? In the land. I'm sure you saw it. Verse 14, it says, afterward, they're going to come out from this nation, and they're going to come out with great possessions. Verse 18, on that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, to your descendants, I give this land. This part of the covenant is all about God promising to Abram, I'm going to put your people here. And he defines the borders, and he says, look, right now it's occupied by at least these 10 tribes. And he names off the names that I'm not going to read again because you can read them. But and that's probably not all of them. The idea is that there's 10 of them named here with the idea that everyone who is there, they think it's their land, but I'm going to make it your land. A wonderful commitment from God to the descendants of Abram that they will have this place. And then a third highlight, that the pathway to the land is going to involve suffering and oppression. 400 years. Fascinating, isn't it? That God would say to Abram, I've got a plan for your people. And for 400 years, they're going to endure oppression. And during that time, there will not be any appearance that the plan of God is making any progress. It'll look quite stalled. And then I'm going to take them out. And I'll plant them in my place. I'll bet Israel would be encouraged when they hear this. Because they're on the edge of the land. Sitting outside of Canaan, looking in and knowing that they are going to look at walled cities and large fortified bastions of arm being protected by armies. But knowing that God has brought them to this place. Not because of some magical prayer, but because this was God's plan promised to Abram. A covenant with him. And they'd be encouraged. We're not Israel. And we aren't going to live in Palestine. And we're not driving out Canaanites. And yet, it is so very true for us as well that God is taking us to a place. We have a destiny that God in his covenant with us has promised. It is a destiny of a new earth, not Middle Earth, the new earth. An earth where the Lord Jesus Christ will reign and everything will be right. It will be as it should be. And God has declared to us that his people are going to be in his place at his time through a pathway of suffering and opposition. It's his pledge to us. Be encouraged. A place where no one will be thinking about doctor visits. No one will be praying for their rebellious children or looking out their doors in fear of locking their doors in fear of thieves. That's our destiny. One that is filled with shalom. The way it should be. The way there is tough, difficult, but he'll get us there. I still find that I would like to know that we're making progress. When I fly to Africa, I don't know if you've ever made these long transcontinental flights. You know, you look out the window and all you see is the Atlantic Ocean. And then several hours go by and you've been sleeping for a while perhaps and you look out the window and all you see is the Atlantic Ocean. A few hours later, all you see is the Atlantic Ocean. It's worse when you go over the Sahara. And it seems there's no progress toward your destination at all. And about the time you think, I can't sit in this seat any longer, a voice comes over the PA and says, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to begin our descent. And the whole atmosphere goes, yeah, we're going to arrive. My friends, God has promised to us that we're going to make the descent. We will arrive at that destiny, God's people in God's place. That's encouraging. Let me give you a third reality that God has for us in this text. It's just one skinny little verse stuck right in the middle. It says in verse 6, Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited to him as righteousness. Your faith gains God's approval. Your faith gains God's approval. That's what this text means. Somehow Abram, against all odds, trusted God. I mean, you understand that this is an unusual verse in this place. Because we start off the text with Abram asking, how do I know I'm going to have a son? And then the next section has, well, how do I know I'm getting to the land? In the midst of two questions where Abram seems to be somewhat doubtful, God says, hey, your faith is applied to you as good standing with me, acceptable to me, in covenant relationship with me. I consider your loyalty, not because of what you've done, but because of your faith. And Abram believed. That's exactly what God expects from us, that our faith would gain God's approval, and that with that assurance, we can look at a situation where it seems the plan of God is making no progress, and we can go, but I'm with him, and he's with me, and I've been approved. He signed the document. That means we're together, approved for relationship. Faith, this kind of faith, is hard. So very hard. You see, this is not the faith that says, I'm just going to create enough positive energy that I'm going to believe, and I think I'll work myself up into such an emotional state. I know that if I think positive, everything's going to turn out right. That's not the faith that Abram has. It's not the kind of faith that says, oh, I know we can make it happen. You see this all the time with sports teams, right? They won the game because they just had faith in themselves. No, it's not that kind of faith. This is not the kind of faith that's just, I'll take a leap of faith. You know, it doesn't make any sense, but I'll just take a leap of faith. A blind faith, that's all I need. No, that's not this faith. This is a faith modeled by Abram, which says, I trust that God can do what he said. That he can take this childless man and turn him into a great nation. I trust that this God will deliver my descendants to their destiny. And for us, it's a faith that says we are part of the people of God, going to the place of God by the hand of God with his approval. That kind of faith. Let's wrap it all together into kind of one idea. We are God's people going to God's place with God's approval. I find that incredibly encouraging. We're God's people going to God's place with God's approval. And it changes the way I look at life, right? When we wake up in the morning and see ourselves that way, it means that I don't have to have God proving every minute of the day that he's doing something. I can trust him. It means that some of us can leave home to pursue God's program. That's what Abram did, because we're God's people going to God's place with God's approval. It means that we can proclaim to all what God is doing, even if they think it's a crazy story, but we understand that we are God's people going to God's place with God's approval. We can give up our money and our possessions. That's what Abram did. He didn't allow the kings to make him rich. He said, no, I can wait for God because we are God's people going to God's place with God's approval. So we can be generous with what he's given to us. In fact, we can even stick with God's people, in this case, the church, and not run away, even if the church is not perfect, which it's not, because we see ourselves as God's people going to God's place with God's approval. I'd still like to see progress. You would too. And it may be that this week you'll get news from a doctor about your health and progress won't look so good. As you're looking for the blessing of God, you might find out that your children are not as responsive or your spouse is not as responsive to spiritual matters as you'd hoped. And you'll feel there's no progress. Maybe that sinful habit will rise up and pin you to the mat one more time. And you'll feel you're not making any progress. Or maybe you just get tired of the journey. I hope these words will encourage you greatly. We are God's people going to God's place with God's approval. Let's go together. And so, our Father, I ask that you'll open our eyes of faith to see what we need to see. I pray for my brothers and sisters gathered in this room that you would encourage us. For we are frail and we are easily discouraged in this journey. Give us grace. Give us vision. Oh Lord, we express anew our confidence in you that you are the God who will deliver on what you've committed to. So afresh, we commit ourselves to you for Jesus' sake. Amen.